You're listening to the Colts Blue Zone Podcast with Mike Chappell and Dave Griffiths.
Inside Fox 9, CBS 4 Podcast Studio, welcome to the Colts Blue Zone Podcast. Alongside Matt Adams, I'm Dave Griffiths. We're giving our Mike Chappell the day off. Hey, everybody who can see us now, if you're watching on YouTube, fancy new gadgets and gizmos. Whatever.
Gadgets and gizmos, I believe.
Great start already to the podcast.
Flawless victory off the top.
It is. And we're coming to you in HD if you're watching on YouTube. But a great job by me showing up in my Syracuse hat, though. It's very on brand.
It is.
And the one that I've had since I went there, as you can tell, it has seen better days. Actually, it hasn't seen better days. It's never been better.
To be fair to Dave, I gave him no warning that we were going to try to do this run through today. No, so he's just okay. Like, I'm just going to dress whatever. And I said, that's fine.
But it's cool. No worries. Like, I don't care. And like I said, I get to rep the orange, and I'm happy about that. But plenty to get to today as the NFL has descended upon us here in Indianapolis, Matt. And that includes Mike Chappell as well, who's going to be out at the Combine today as we tape this podcast. That's why he's not joining us. But you can read all his work online, fox59.com, cbs4indy.com, and also check him out on Twitter at mchappell51 for all the content he will produce there. And as always, the content that he has for us all the time. But the NFL is here for the Combine. The Colts are here. The Colts are talking. We heard from Shane Steichen. We heard from Chris Ballard. It's funny, Matt. I wasn't working yesterday, so like I was just kind of perusing Twitter, and as I was looking for Colts content to see what some other guys were posting, to see what they were saying, like nobody posted like anything about Shane Steichen and what he was saying. Everybody was posting about Ballard.
I was the same way. I listened to both there because they had two media availabilities. They had a longer one that was kind of national media and local media. Then they had just a local media availability as well.
Yeah.
And I listened to them both. Ballard, I mean, I will give this to Ballard. When he talks, he does say things. At least you can take something away from. He's got a quote. He's got at least some insight into you that you can take away from. So both of his had some stuff. I listened to Steichen. His were a little bit shorter, which, I mean, it's no surprise, but his were a little bit shorter, and there's just no there when it comes to Steichen.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So that's what we've gotten used to kind of in our couple years. The only time that he gives you substance is when he says your second-year quarterback is just a little sore.
In week
17. That's the substance that you get, which is not good substance to be coming out of the head coach's mouth. But anyway, at the Combine, we've got specialists are talking. Specialists are on the field today.
I think so, yes.
As we tape this on Wednesday. Defensive line and linebackers will be the first big group to be out there on Thursday. Defensive backs and tight ends Friday. Quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers Saturday. Offensive line on Sunday. Those will be the guys. That's the schedule for them out there. If you're going to be tuning in there on the NFL Network or expecting content from us at Fox 59 and CBS 4 Indy as well. We'll get to all that. And I've got some players that I want to get to who are here, guys that could put up some good RAS scores.
So we have relative athletic scores.
Darn right. That's what Chris Ballard likes. Really, last year was a little bit of a step back from his previous two drafts. Not as much, but still had some guys who are hefty in the RAS score, which put me onto Tanner Bordellini.
It's kind of so
it's not exclusive that no. Didn't happen last year.
But it's kind of one of those things, like if you have a guy that's kind of like an edge case, or you're like, is this somebody that the Colts might want to look at, that RAS score can kind of give you an indication that maybe this is a guy that they'll maybe lean toward. If it's between this guy and another guy, there it goes.
And there is one that I have right now that I like, one guy that I'm already eyeing, maybe two that I already like, if indeed a RAS score is something that we're looking for in the first couple rounds of this draft. That is, of course, unless Chris Ballard trades away the first round pick for 27 third round picks in the future.
We'll get to this, but he did say that he does like the mid-range talent on the offensive line. And my first thought was, oh my goodness, we're going to trade away the first round pick. We're going to get three mid-round picks, and we're going to pick up three more offensive linemen.
You can already stamp it, but let's get into a little bit of what Chris Ballard had to say, because that is the most newsworthy part of this week here for the Colts. Talking plenty out there at the Combine, along with the local media, the national media as well. And Anthony Richardson really kind of the focus of much of what he had to say, which makes sense, Matt, because when Chris Ballard, when Jim Irsay announced that Chris Ballard was going to come back as general manager, like we've talked about this before, that it makes sense in the fact that if you draft a quarterback in the first round, like it makes sense to give your head coach and your general manager a little time to put the right pieces around him. Now, Richardson disappointed at times last year, flashed at times last year, but at the same time, like Ballard would be focusing on Richardson because the prevailing opinion, and probably more than opinion, pretty darn close to fact, is Richardson's future and Ballard's future are pretty tied together now. And the hope is that for him, that Richardson takes a significant step forward this year to give him a little bit more sure footing in terms of his job security. Because with Jim Irsay, it seemed like his job was very secure, but there's only so much more bubbling can come up from the fan base that would not make the owner pay a little bit more attention to that in the future.
Yeah, it is one of those things where those two are just kind of tied together. And I don't think Chris Ballard's a guy that gets particularly nervous about things because it feels like he's been, from a fan base perspective, on the hot seat for a few years. Same results.
He's extremely confident in his process.
Right. He likes his methodology. He believes that it works, and there have just been some setbacks, and that's why it's not worked for the Colts. But like we talking about the QB competition, and is Richardson really the guy here? He's entering year three, which means if he doesn't show signs here, then you've got to think ahead about that big next contract. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do with the fifth year option? Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't work, this is supposed to be the guy, and the guy that brought him in is the general manager. So, you know, is that the end of the line?
Yeah, this is a big year, obviously, for Richardson and for Ballard, and so he focused primarily on Ballard, or the media primarily focused on Richardson as they were asking questions. So when it comes to AR, we spoke a ton about
Richardson. We already talked about a lot of this.
So we're ahead of the curve here on the Colts Blue Zone podcast. But we talked about a lot of what to expect with Richardson and what Ballard had said before. And he expounded on that a little bit in terms of offering competition to Richardson this offseason. Chris said that Richardson will not enter year three as an anointed starter, as he was last year.
Right.
And as we would almost argue, he was in year one. Not exactly.
It kind of felt like it, though. I mean, because when they made the decision, there was not you guys were out at training camp. There was not a clear favorite out there. And you could even argue that Minshew had put in a stronger, more consistent quarterbacking out there. So, it's for sure. Season one seems a little less anointed, but still they made him the starting quarterback. Season two, they're like, this is our guy. This is the guy we're going to hand you the reins of the franchise, of the team. Have at it, kid. And it didn't quite go where they wanted it to go.
Right. What he does have going for him now is he's not rehabbing this offseason.
Very true.
He is just training as a quarterback. He's developing as a quarterback, not as a guy whose right shoulder was crunched into the ground by a 300-pound defensive lineman or whoever it was falling on him. I can't remember exactly.
Was it Harold Landry, I think?
But Harold Landry, big guy, you know, sacks quarterbacks for a living.
Yes, he does.
Large dude, strong dude. And as big and strong as Anthony Richardson is, you can only take so much in that area. So anyway, he's Chris Ballard said he's working in Florida with a quarterback coach, Tom Gormley, and the biometrics specialist, Chris Hess, as well, trying to develop better habits so that you don't complete 47.7% of your passes, or better yet, you complete better than 40.
Right,
you do
right,
complete
right.
47.7%, but you increase that
go
a little
up.
Bit. It's a little bit higher.
Don't go down,
well,
go up.
No, exactly. That would be an absolute disaster if that were to happen next year. But in terms of the competition, that was something that Chris mentioned in his postseason press conference, that he needed to bring in competition, not just for Richardson, but for elsewhere on the roster, but specifically about Richardson, that AR would have to earn his starting spot and acquiring competition would come through free agency, a trade, or the draft. He kind of left his options open there. I would say if you're not drafting a quarterback in the first or second round, there is no competition.
No, there's no reason to do that. Right. You know, it's got to be trade or free agency.
Very much so. So that's how you actually bring in competition for the quarterback. And drafting a quarterback in the first or second round, I think this fan base would freak out if that were to happen.
I agree.
Completely understand
100%.
That would happen. So when Chris says he's keeping his options open, Like that's him just keeping close to the vest or trying to.
Right.
I don't think that the draft is a legitimate angle to create competition for Anthony Richardson this year. It's going to be trade or free agency.
And imagine if they did take a free agent or a quarterback in the fifth round and it's close in training camp. I mean,
that might
disaster.
Be worse.
Disaster, absolute disaster.
Right. So anyway, if you take a Kyle McCord out of Syracuse sometime there in the mid rounds, and he's challenging for the starting spot, that's not what you want. Chris said, "quote It'll be open in terms of the competition at quarterback. It'll be open, and of course, it's got to be somebody that can really challenge from a production standpoint." "Quote Anthony's accepted all of it. Like he understands there needs to be some growth and there's work. That's one thing I'm really proud of him about." Like, there's no deferring or defensiveness. It's like, I know I've got to get to work. Another quote. I think you saw spurts of it, like Anthony's skill set. Obviously,
right.
We did. That's true. Quote, more, continuing the quote. He is really competitive, and I think for a 6-game stretch there, we saw some really special stuff out of it. Now we just got to be get consistent. He's a really good dude. He cares, and I think he'll put the work in. Last quote. I said this from the get-go. I think he's a natural thrower. I do. The more passes he throws, especially with his feet, making sure he gets his feet right, makes sure he can layer throws. Like all of that stuff needs work. But when he does it right, it's a beautiful thing. Now it's just being able to do it right down after down after down, which is all true.
Yeah.
Like you see a lot of beauty in Richardson's play. And you see a lot of ugly as well. That's the problem. Making it more consistent. Like, and that's, in Richardson's defense, it's hard to establish that type of consistency when you're working on it and you're also rehabbing a shoulder injury. Like, you're trying to get back to 100%, and your focus is strength training. Your focus is not the fine-tuning aspect of your mechanics. It's a lot more groundwork. To get back to what you were before. Like after you work your way up, then the more fine-tuning stuff can happen. So that's what they're hopeful of this offseason, that he can work on that, and that he'll be a better quarterback because of it. But there will also be competition alongside. And here's my thought about what Chris is saying here about the competition, because it seemed to me like he stressed it more as an open competition here than he did after the season. And he said it would be a competition after the season, for sure. But there were a couple times this week where he really said it would be a real battle, that Anthony's not the anointed starter, blah, 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 that whoever comes in could have a legitimate shot at being the starting quarterback. Now, we kind of touched on that last week. We all thought, along with Chap, that the Colts really want Anthony Richardson to be their starting quarterback, and I still hold that to be true. But this is what Chris needs to say right now. Whenever a GM needs to say something, you have to be wary of whether it is the 100% truth or not.
Right.
Like when it comes to going out and finding another quarterback and bringing in a Justin Fields, say, he needs to believe that he has a legitimate shot to be the starting quarterback. So Chris needs to go on the mic now at the combine and say, whoever comes in has a legitimate shot at the starting quarterback, even if, as we talked about last week, if it's a close competition, it's going to Richardson.
Right.
Maybe even if the other quarterback is a little bit ahead, they might still go with Richardson because they still see his potential and they still see that he needs to grow. So, like, I think that even though Chris made a couple of statements this week that pointed to this being an open competition, I think everything we talked about last week in our podcast still holds true, that they still want Richardson to be the starter. They still hope he is the starter. And if it's close, they're going to go with him as the starter.
It's just kind of one of those things that you're absolutely right. The deck is just sort of stacked just a little bit in Richardson's favor because, listen, the Colts invested a first round top five pick in this guy a couple years ago, and they cannot afford to miss. Now, they can't stick with him for too long either. And so this is really the make it or break it year. And if he does emerge out of training camp and say they bring in Fields or they bring in, I don't know, Dan Jones or Russell Wilson or whomever you've got, if it's training camp and it's close, but it's close to the point where we got to go with the other guy, that's a really bad situation the Colts are in.
Now, if you want Anthony Richardson to be at his best, you need the best blockers in front of him. And there were several offensive line issues that were brought up with Chris Bauer this week, because as relatively steady as the Colts offensive line has been, I think, in recent years, I would call it relatively steady. There are some questions this offseason, or some decisions that have to be made.
Right.
Some of them are obvious decisions. Others are not quite as obvious about where the offensive line is going to go into the immediate future. And we'll start with Braden Smith. The right tackle status is still a bit unclear after he was placed on the reserve non-football illness list in December last season for reasons that were never unveiled, and that kept him out of the final five games of the season. The reasons are still not been unveiled.
Not telling us what's going on there. And that's fine. That's their prerogative. I'm not criticizing that at all. I'm just saying we have no more insight now from what we had back in December when he first kind of had to step away from the team.
It's always been personal reasons, and they left it at that. And even with several questions from media trying to uncover maybe minor details, skirt around the edge with both Chris and maybe even with some offensive linemen,
not getting anywhere,
not getting any sniffs. And that's like for the linemen in the room, that shows their respect for Braden,
absolutely,
their friendship with Braden. And I never really expected to get anything from them, but Chris hasn't really let on anything either, or anybody in the front office has let on anything. But the one little bit more that we got from Chris, here's what he said. What I will tell you is he's doing really well and he wants to play football. We'll work through the rest of that. So this is not a sense that he had a personal issue at the end of the year, and he was seriously considering at the time, where he still is.
Walking away from the game or retiring or something along those lines.
Because that was completely on the table, I think.
Because we just didn't know. You had everything that you could think of.
Right. This, we got a little bit more clarity in that sense, that Braden Smith wants to play football. And for the Colts, that's a good thing, because you need tackles. And Braden Smith is a good tackle. To go back to square one or close to it, would be a step backwards in Anthony Richardson's development. Like, you draft Matt Gonzalez and you think he's going to be a good player, or even the year before that, if it's Blake Freeland, whoever could win that competition between them at right tackle, because I'm sure that would be a competition if Braden Smith wasn't going to play. Like, it would be a step back from Braden Smith at his best. That's because Braden Smith is a veteran. He's earning $17, $19 million a year. He was made the fifth highest paid right tackle when they signed him, or something like that, or in the top five somewhere. At his best, Braden Smith's a darn good player.
He's an elite right tackle when he's healthy. Now, the health hasn't been on his favor the last couple
it
of seasons.
Not. And he's still been pretty good.
And he was still pretty good. Like, he was essentially playing on one leg and was still being effective for the Colts. But yeah, it's like I said here, kind of in the rundown, like, you could cut Smith. It'll save you about $17 million in cap space, but it also leaves you with a gigantic hole on the right side of the offensive line.
Like, how confident are you in the backup? And I don't think that either of those guys, Gonzalez or Freeland, has done enough to inspire the confidence that you would want protect Anthony Richardson from the right side. Like, I just don't think they're there yet. And maybe that's the plan to slide him in there. It would be a risk to cut Braden Smith if he wants to keep playing football. And like that, I think that's also a legitimate option on the table. It depends on what you want to spend your money on, because the Colts would save $17 million mm-hmm. by cutting Braden Smith right now and going to the future plan, which would be either Gonzalez or Freeland, or if they draft somebody, if they just look at both
of
those
lot
guys.
A lot of mid-round talent there.
Exactly.
Dave. And the offensive line especially.
Well, fantastic. Good for the offensive line. But anyway, I think that's a legitimate option on the table. Because as Chris says, we're going to work through that. And I think this is a sense that he's telling the truth. Like, they're going to have to work through some decisions with Braden Smith.
They've got to figure it out.
Is Braden in their long-term plans at right tackle?
Couldn't tell you.
Might be, might not be, if they really like Gonzalez. I'm focusing on Gonzalez. Freeland also an option. Like, if they think that guy, whoever it is their long-term right tackle, maybe you do cut him now and take a couple more lumps this year at that position and have that person develop. And I'm not saying that's the right decision. I'm not saying that's the wrong decision.
No, but it's a thing that could happen.
But it could very well happen, and it could make your money go elsewhere.
Right.
So that is very much an option. And that's in part an option because you know you have to invest somewhat in the offensive line. And if you're going to invest in one position, one piece of the offensive line, it's probably your left tackle, right? And the Colts have a left tackle on a rookie contract that is about to get paid. Entering the fourth year and final year of his rookie contract is Bernhard Raimann. He's currently finishing up this season and will be in line for a very hefty extension himself. Bernhard Raimann has done everything to indicate that he is the Colts' left tackle of the future.
100%.
He is not going anywhere. They are signing him to a long-term deal when they can come to an agreement on one. So left tackles in the NFL are not cheap. They're going to make even guys like like Bernhard Raimann, who've not been to a Pro Bowl, if he's a good player and a young player at that, you're going to lock him in for 3-4 years, $20 million a year. That's what left tackles get. The best left tackles will be in the $25 to $30 million range, you know? The best of the best left right. tackles. But for Bernhard Raimann, you're looking at paying him $18 to $20 million probably a season. And that'll kind of start after this next year. If they want, they can work toward an extension this offseason with him. That's entirely possible. And I think it would be wise to, mm-hmm. to sign him because where's that number going to go, Matt? Up or down?
It's going to go up. The line always goes up for these things.
It only goes up. It's always behooving the team to sign a player to an extension as soon as possible. Look back at the Michael Pittman Jr. contract.
Absolutely.
It was a hefty contract when he signed, and then the next wide receiver signed a contract, and it was already a deal.
Yeah, it already looked like a bargain. I know that's absurd when you're talking about the numbers these guys are pulling, but
that's
how it goes.
So that could be a reason the Colts decide to move on from Braden Smith, because you can only invest so much money in your offensive line. You need to put it elsewhere. Like, you need to give it to your weapons. You need to give it to defensive players. And the Colts were at a point a couple years ago when they had Braden Smith, and a couple other more expensive players. I think it might have been right when Braden Smith signed that they had their offensive line was just, it was so expensive.
Yeah, they had Quentin.
Yeah,
Quentin, to pay
big one. So I don't know. I don't think Costanzo was still playing.
I don't think so at that point. They had Kelly. Kelly was a big contract. Yeah,
because Eric Fisher was coming off a Pro Bowl year, even though he was he had torn his Achilles. So I think that was the year in 21 where they had so much money invested in that offensive line, And anyway, like you just can't have that much money invested in your offensive line for the long term. So all that to say that maybe that's the reason that Braden Smith doesn't get a contract extension with the Colts is because they want to give that money to Bernhard Raimann, and then they'll work with the rookie contract that Matt Gonsalves has to offer over at that position. But I believe Raimann was asked. I mean, Coach Ballard was asked about Raimann, and the quote that Ballard gave was, quote, "The progress Bernie has made from year one to now has been pretty incredible. I'm not going to get into contract and talks," which he never does.
No, he's not going to. That's not a thing he does.
But he's a really good player. He's a good Colt. So like that when you hear that from Chris Bauer, that basically means he wants to sign him. Like, he's a really good player. He's a good Colt.
Yeah,
and like that when those are the words that comes out of
the mouth lines when, are open.
When he wants to sign someone, right. He wants to keep someone here. What the other thing is, we'll work through that. That's what he says about Braden Smith. Like, well, yeah, he wants to play. We'll work through that. That's more along the lines of, we'll see.
A little more 50-50 there on that one.
So you'll learn to speak Chris Ballard here as long as we've been here in Indianapolis.
Let's continue the offensive line discussion, talk a little Ryan Kelly as well. I mean, we've talked about him, not ad nauseum, but we've talked about Kelly quite a bit here. From his perspective, it sounds like that Kelly is probably counting his days here in Indianapolis. But I will say, you know, Ballard didn't close the door entirely. He did say he's going to meet with his representatives next week. They're going to talk things out. You know, are they going to be able to find a number that's going to work for the team? I highly doubt that. So I think Kelly's probably gone.
Ryan Kelly has been immensely valuable to the Colts since he was drafted years ago to stop the center carousel in front of Andrew Luck. And I've said this before, it ironically started the quarterback carousel.
It is just the worst.
The worst luck
twist
franchise,
yeah.
Really,
yeah.
In that sense. But Kelly has been a very, very good center for a long time and a leader in the locker room. He's a guy who's been on the NFLPA's executive committee.
Right.
Like, he's not just a leader here. He's a leader in the league. But again, there comes a time where you look elsewhere. And the right when the writing's on the wall, that's when you have to read it. You shouldn't ignore
no.
it. Mm-hmm. And when they drafted Tanner Bordellini last year, like, the writing was on the wall that Ryan Kelly's time here in Indianapolis right. was very nearly up. And for Chris to say that he's going to meet with Kelly's people, fine. Then go ahead.
It's probably to meet with them to tell them, yeah, sure, guys, I don't think we got a thing.
Every discussion we've had with Kelly has indicated that he's not going to be here next
right.
year.
Because honestly, as we've talked about, if they'd really wanted to keep Ryan Kelly, they would have done it when they were handing out some of their contracts last offseason.
Exactly. So, yeah, Kelly's future was touched on. But I don't think that that's anything we need to get into any real detail.
No. Just wanted to mention it because I kind of had us going defensive right, line, right. and I'm like, we got two more offensive linemen.
Exactly.
We got two more offensive linemen to talk about.
Will Fries,
let's talk about
Will Fries is the other offensive lineman that we need to mention. Was really playing very good football at the start of last year before he broke his leg in Jacksonville. As if something else needed to go wrong
right.
in Jacksonville.
In Jacksonville,
exactly. It's where the Colts go to have a terrible time every year, and where I go to, I don't know, because I enjoy the torment for some reason. But Will Fries is a free agent. He just finished his rookie deal, his 4-year rookie deal. He was a 7th round pick, I believe, out of Penn State.
Seventh round.
He could hit the open market, though. Ballard says he wants to get something done. He said Fries is progressing nicely in his recovery from that injury. When you break your leg and it's like, I don't want to say dangling, but it is not in the right place.
Yeah, it was a gruesome.
That takes a
gruesome
long
injury.
Time to get back to where it's supposed to be. Chris says, quote, I couldn't be more happy for him. Hopefully we can get something done. If not, we'll get into free agency and see what the market is. Visiting his agent later this week, visited with Will a bunch. And for Will, there's value in being here because, like, if you're trying to get back from injury, again, like, the more you know, the better I think your situation is. Like, if you want to work your way back from this awful injury and you want to learn a new blocking scheme and learn new teammates and learn new coaches and what they all like, that's a lot to put on your plate. Is it impossible? No, certainly not. And if somebody's willing to pay you a significant sum more to do that, then maybe you do
it. You take it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But all things being equal, if you're getting equal interest from other parties, then why not stay here where you know everything else and you have a good, you took significant steps forward last year, and then you probably get a 1-year deal from the Colts anyway to say, hey,
right. let's kind of approve a deal, make sure everything's okay.
And then next year you can make a decision on your future if you want to be here or not. And at that point, I mean, the Colts would probably, if he's healthy and everything, go a little bit more in on him and pay him a little bit more if he's healthy and give him a 3-year deal, you know, to be their guard at that point.
Yeah, it's just kind of one of those weird situations where the injury was obviously bad for Fries, and at the time it was bad for the Colts. In the long term, it might have, because of the injury issue, that probably hurts Fries more than the actual injury, because he was playing at such a high level for the Colts. He was probably looking at a pretty nice contract, and he may still be able to get one, but I think the market for him's might be a little more depressed, but I guess we'll just have to see.
And that's a good chunk on the offensive line. Let's discuss the defensive line. And that starts with Dayo Odangbo, who is a free agent. Well, is in line to be a free
right.
agent, unless the Colts get a deal done with him before free agency begins, which is now just like 2 weeks away.
See, it's coming up.
It's right sinking around
right
the
there.
Corner. Like, this is a busy time for GMs, man, across the country. A, they have to be here for the combine, and then you're really trying to cross the finish line with some free agents that you have. And with Dayo, he has no interest, I don't think, in signing with the Colts right now. And that's nothing against the Colts. It has everything to do with being a mammoth human being
mm-hmm.
and an edge rusher that showed some potential specifically 2 years
especially,
ago.
Yeah.
And could garner some interest on the open market. Like, he wants to hit the open market. And he's going to get the opportunity to do that. So we'll see how much the Colts value him in terms of where they can fit him into their plans or how much another team values him. To and we'll see what he values. Does he value money? Does he value playing time? Does he value consistency and familiarity being here? All things that are to be determined from Dio. And he's certainly a valuable piece here in Indianapolis, but he's also a rotational piece and has been in the backup role in terms of the rotational piece. Does he want the opportunity to play more elsewhere? He probably could get the opportunity to play more elsewhere. So I think this will be a really intriguing thing that we have to watch in 2 weeks when free agency opens.
Yeah, Odengbo is going to be a really interesting story, like you said, because if he hits the open market, I think the Colts are going to be priced out of wanting him to be able to keep him. I mean, they can't keep everybody. They kind of made that impact. They kind of made that attempt last offseason. This offseason is supposed to be a different philosophy. But he's so young, and I know that Ballard likes him a lot. He drafted him. He liked the athletic traits. Fully recovered from that Achilles injury. Had a monster season, not last year, but the year before. But he still thought that even though, like, production-wise, the numbers were not huge, he thought that Odengbo still made an impact on the team.
Here's Ballard's quote on Dio Odengbo. Quote, he's becoming exactly what we thought he would become. He's still young. He's still... I think it's still in front of Dio, and I like where he's headed. We'll see how free agency works out. Happy for him because I think he's going to garner some attention. That seems to indicate that he's not going. They're not going to sign him. I think.
Before. Yeah.
Like I said, Dio wants to hit free agency.
Yep.
The Colts are not going to franchise tag him and pay him $20 million it for one season. That's not in the cards.
No, and they haven't gotten that type of. Free agency is such a funny thing. Like, the Colts have not gotten $20 million worth of production out of Odengbo over the years.
No.
But another team that needs another edge rusher, that wants somebody like that, they may be willing to do that, especially because he's still a young player.
Every team has more salary cap this year because that number goes up.
Goes
and
up.
You get a little bit more room. You say, hey, we like this guy. Let's steal him away from Indianapolis. And like Chris said, like when he drafted him, he's becoming what they thought he would be. And I remember them talking about what they thought he would be when drafting him, saying that they considered him like a first round type talent.
Right.
But he was just coming off that Achilles injury.
He slipped because Achilles injuries, as we have mentioned many times on the show, whether it's Julian Blackman, whether it's, you know, Dio, whether it's Eric Fisher.
Takes time.
It takes time.
Ebukam as well.
Ebukam as Samson well. Ebukam, absolutely. Yeah, good segue, Dave.
Missed the 2024 season with a torn Achilles that he got in the third or fourth training camp practice. Awful injury. Remember it happening, being like, well, dadgummit. There goes the Colts' leading sack man from last year. Ebukam, here's the quote from Ballard. Quote, Samson's been doing great work in terms of rehab and coming back.
See, we didn't get a whole lot about, but it at least is an update, something to talk about, because Achilles injuries can be devastating. This is a fast twitch guy who is off the line, explosive. You know, what's that going to mean for him? Because if you don't bring him back, you can clear some salary cap space. But if you think he's got some juice still as a rusher, then you're going to want him on your team.
Is the juice worth the squeeze?
Right.
Is what you always ask. And the squeeze for him is, I believe, between $7 and $9 million, somewhere in that range, for one more year on his contract. And no doubt that 2 years ago, he was the Colts' leading sack man.
Nine and a half sacks, I think.
And they needed more of that production last year. They didn't get it. And whether it was because Laiatu is still developing, obviously he is, and or not having Ebukam in there, the pass rush took a step back last season. So, like, how much do you value that $7 to $9 million?
Right.
In like for an edge rusher, that's a pretty good deal, you know?
Pretty good bargain, like, for an edge rusher.
It's always nice, like, Chris talks about this, Chris Ballard. He says, like, it's always can be easy to cut someone and get that money back, but then who are you going to replace him with? Like, are you going to get the same production Ebukam can give you from elsewhere, or even at a different position,
right,
that same type of production, for $7 to $9 million? And the answer to that might be no.
Might be no.
It really might be no. So like, trying to work him back into the rotation could be the one piece. Like, we talked about several pieces the Colts could cut to free up like $30 million,
right,
and he was one of those pieces. That one could be one of them. They still maintain to keep him back, and because they don't believe they can get the type of production elsewhere if that rehab is going well. Like, so much depends on his rehab and how things are going and how he's looking. So I think this is definitely more of a medical issue, medical question for me, whether he comes back.
Yeah.
And Chris, like we said, Chris didn't talk about it too much, but we'll see within the next couple of weeks, I think, whether he has a future here.
The good news, quote unquote, is if Ebukam had to get injured, he didn't get injured in midseason. He got injured before the season. So he has, by the time they'll hit training camp, he will have had a full year to recover. But with these Achilles, a lot of times we see a year and a half, 2 years is when you finally kind of get back to where you were. And that's just not enough time. I mean, we saw it with Dallas Flowers, man. Mm-hmm. That was a great athlete, good kickoff returner for the Colts, promising cornerback prospect for them. And the burst was just not there a year removed from injury. It always concerns Achilles, knee injuries, you know, obviously will worry you from a structural standpoint. But when you talk about athleticism, the Achilles, man, that is such a tough one to deal with.
Chris Ballard's always asked every year where he sees the strength in the draft. And he's always relatively honest, I think, where there. At least he sounds like he is. He says defensive line is really good.
Yep.
So that, again, that could give you some ideas what they want to do with a guy like Ebukam or a guy like Tyquan Lewis. Tight end is really good.
Yep.
I could hear Colts Nation saying, thank God.
Thank goodness, yeah. Yes. I mean, there are three or four guys mm-hmm. that you can probably get in the first or second round that mm-hmm. I think would make an impact for you from the tight end position.
There's not too many guys who wouldn't make an impact
on this Colts roster. To be fair, yes, you're absolutely
let's
right.
Be perfectly yeah, yeah. honest with what that position right. did last year.
You're right.
Offensive line, especially mid-round, as you have mentioned yeah. already here in the podcast.
I can see some trading down. Probably not the first round. I don't think he'll do that. Although you just don't know.
It's not out of the question.
And it depends on how the draft falls to. Right. If there's a guy that they've got that gets picked maybe earlier than they think, then yep. yeah, maybe he will move back. But I would definitely expect the Colts to pick up a couple of picks in the mid round because he's going to want to add offensive linemen because it's Chris Ballard and that's what he does.
He says secondary thinks there's some really good secondary players. Mm-hmm. And overall, quote, I think there's some positions that really do have some good depth in here. End quote. The national, I think, sentiment is this is a really good running back draft. That there's a lot of mm-hmm. running backs.
Yeah, heard that too.
Which is good for the league after Saquon Barkley led the Eagles to a Super Bowl and has kind of revitalized the mm-hmm. running back game a little bit.
Having that discussion again, right? How valuable is a running back? Yep. And now it's turned the other way to, yep.
Running backs can be kind of valuable.
It's always cyclical. It is. It is.
Like you're like, well, why do you like running backs? Who cares? But hold on a second. Yes. Those guys are they're pretty valuable as we learned last year.
And Ballard did touch because somebody, I think it was the local press availability, asked him about running back position. Mm-hmm. You know, whether they wanted to add somebody, and he didn't really. You know, we like our guys that sort of thing. But he did specifically mention again Zach Moss because he had come in and done such a good job yep. in relief of Jonathan Taylor a couple seasons ago.
He was very valuable. They need a running back who can consistently catch the ball. And I think Taylor can. Like he did it, as I mentioned one or two podcasts ago here, he did it in 2021 pretty well and just hasn't done it at the same level
Not quite replicated.
And to be fair, 21 was his best year running and catching.
Yeah, he had a great year. He was an MVP. Like, dark horse outside, but mm-hmm. he was an MVP, legitimate MVP candidate that season.
So I think that if they're going to sign someone, they draft someone, getting someone who has that ability, I think would be wise.
Yeah,
it's not going to be anyone that supplants Jonathan Taylor. He's still a top 4 or 5 running back in the NFL right now, but it's going to be someone that can take some of the load off.
Yep, take some of the load off. Maybe the Colts kind of telegraphed it last year whenever Trey Sermon was in the game, right? Mm-hmm. That you knew that 85% of the time they were going to pass.
Yep.
Because Taylor's strength is not blitz pickup.
No, it is not.
And so they'll probably need something along those lines too.
That'd be great. So Chris Ballard was apparently a gamer back in the day.
I put this in the rundown. I never thought I would ever hear the words Tecmo Bowl come out of Chris Ballard's mouth.
Listen, this game was just a fantastic game. I loved Tecmo Super Bowl. It was specifically, which is what we have here on the screen if you're watching us on YouTube, on Fox Now, Fox 59 Now, excuse me. But Chris says, quote, he was talking about just the advanced level of players right now. He believes the players have more and more knowledge of games thanks to games like Madden mm-hmm. nowadays. Here's Chris's quote. When you look at how advanced the game is, when I was at that age, there was no way. We didn't have that. We had Tecmo Bowl, which, I mean, you weren't learning defense as an offensive scheme. They're doing this now from a young age, end quote, which is true. The Madden, I don't play it anymore, but it is incredibly intricate. And it is about learning defenses and going through reads. If you want to be at the best.
Yeah, if you
want
to be the peak guy, you're making a million different button presses, but when you're at the line of scrimmage, adjusting routes, adjusting your offensive line, sliding them over, picking up the blitz, and the defense is doing all the same things to counter you now. So, you know, it's an interesting point for sure.
They have made it so that you can learn football from Madden, and it's not just the bare bones basics of run to the right, run to the left, give it to Bo Jackson and run all over the field before you finally get into the end zone, because you waste literally the entire clock on one play just having everyone chase you around and have some fun with it and get into the end zone.
Did you play? I take it you played some Tecmo
Super Bowl. Super Bowl was like, I had it when I was younger for sure. And I love playing with Bo and playing with the Nigerian nightmare, Christian Okoye.
Oh, yeah. Christian Okoye.
It was also fun because guys would just bounce off him if they touched him. Bam, bam, bam. And he'd just run through everybody. And, of course, who could forget QB Eagles as well? Because there are some players.
Not licensed,
didn't
right?
Have the license for right, yeah. Like a Randall Cunningham, specifically, was numbers like QB Eagles was his name. And there were several others in the league that were like that. But, obviously, me, growing up as an Eagles fan, that's the one that I remember. Because I wanted to play with the Eagles at that point and have Reggie White destroy people. And I had Chris Spielman with the Lions was fun
okay.
to play with too.
Okay.
Also because he was good blitzer in that game. Lawrence Taylor with the Giants was really good to play with as well. Those are the names that just come up immediately. Of course, Montana to Rice, if you wanted to just chuck it. And there was a 90% chance that he was going to catch that ball, whatever that, it was.
So. We were a Sega Genesis household. Okay, so we had NFL 94 with starring Joe Montana football.
Yep.
And then a bunch of iterations of Madden. But the Joe Montana football, I specifically remember the 94 version because it had sports talk. So the announcer had this electronic voice and he's like, this is the game between the Indianapolis Colts and the Cincinnati Bengals. And it would call Montana under center by name, but no other quarterbacks. It would be the quarterback drops back for, you know, the Cowboys or the Bengals or whomever.
He drops back.
And for the Chiefs, because that was when Montana was with the Chiefs, it'd be like, Montana's under center. He drops back. He throws it deep, you know. It's nice. Great, great game.
Good memories.
Yeah, good memories.
But yeah, I was a little bit older than you, so I got the taste of Tecmo Super Bowl. Which was absolutely epic from my childhood. Good memories. Three Colts are in Pro Football Focus's top 100 players. DeForest Buckner at 92nd is the sixth highest graded interior lineman in the NFL. Missed five games with an ankle sprain last year, but did still finish with seven sacks. Bernard Raimann, 88th on this list of top 100 players, and finished top 15 in run blocking, 10th, and in pass protection, 14th. Among left tackles last year, received a top 8 overall grade at that position.
That's an interesting, like, he's 10th and 14th, right. But still top 10.
It's consistency in both, I think, is what makes it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And Quentin Nelson's ranked 50th there. Nelson was 4th among all guards in overall grade and was one of only two guards to have top 5 grades as both a run and a pass blocker. All certainly worthy players. Jonathan Taylor would be another one that you would consider, but Pro Football Focus, we've talked about in the past, is a good tool for NFL fans. It's not perfect. I think it's great to use in conjunction
not
with
perfect.
Other things, but they do so much on grading, and it's purely numbers and statistics. Well, not and somewhat statistics driven, but it's very much trying to break down what you see into numbers. It's more of a
it's a subjective way.
Sabermetrics baseball, kind of.
It's a subjective way of coming up with an objective measure.
And it's harder to do in football than it is in baseball.
Yep.
Because there's a lot more to the game. And it's hard to exactly evaluate success on a play, I think, for offensive linemen specifically. Mm-hmm.
Very much so.
That's tough to do. But anyway, those are the Colts that Pro Football Focus deems to be among the best in the NFL. But no Colts player better than 50th in the league is
not great. And two of the other guys there near the 90s.
Exactly. So. Like you would expect, you know, there are 32 teams in the league, so you would expect every team to have about three on average,
right,
in this top group. And you would expect one to be in the top 30 or so. But the Colts top is 50, according to this. So yeah.
And honestly, Buckner got a little bit dinged last year because of he was dinged up.
Yep.
So injuries that hurt. To think that Buckner's not a top 30 player in the league, I have a hard time buying that. Mm-hmm. But again, this is their measurements. This is their metrics that they've done. So different.
All right. Now we get to what you've all been waiting for. Dave's players to watch at the NFL Combine. I have a short list here. It's not too long. If y'all have been longtime viewers of us, you remember these shows where our old producer Joe Hopkins would talk about it for, and probably do like three more special podcasts about his experiences at the Combine because he loved it so much. But anyway, my players, several players that I think have a chance to have really good Combine numbers. And to because we know how much Chris Ballard and the Colts enjoy their RAS scores. Number one is not one that I expect the Colts to have much interest in, but it is the one quarterback on the list is Jalen Milroe out of Alabama. Mm-hmm. If you've watched him play, really impressive athletic player that needs work on the finer points of playing quarterback.
Hmm. What does that sound like?
I don't know.
He's got more college experience than the kid that the Colts
certainly are. Has more college experience. But Anthony Richardson was 6'4", 244 pounds. Jalen Milroe 6'1", 220 pounds. So he's different. Not the same behemoth specimen, but is still
has a lot of the same athletic traits. Right.
For 220 pounds, he's pretty darn fast and pretty quick and pretty agile and can get around a defensive end. So I'm interested to see exactly
and has a rocket
tests.
Of an arm.
Very much so. Laser rocket arm. Yeah. In terms of running back, Virginia Tech's Bashal Tootin, a 5'11", 209-pound former track star. So very similar to Jonathan Taylor, again, in this aspect. Tootin averaged 6.3 yards per carry for the Hokies last year. And like I said, Tootin, 5'11", 209 pounds. JT is 5'10", 226 pounds. So he's a little bit more stocky. But it'll be interesting to see what Tootin runs at the 40, because when Taylor ran a 4.39, 40-yard dash at the Combine,
people noticed.
At 226 pounds, that is special.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? And I remember, like, we did a story on Taylor a couple years ago for our Colts Blue Zone podcast, our Colts Blue Zone weekly pregame show that we do on Fox 59 CBS4. And we interviewed, like, his old coaches from his old high school and how he was running track there. And then we got some old video of him. And he was like double the size of every other guy he's lining up against in high school. And he would still beat them all to the finish line. It was remarkable to see how big Jonathan Taylor
was.
It's just not right.
No, right?
It is not normal for a human being that is that big to run that fast. But Tootin is a little bit smaller, but still could put up some pretty impressive numbers in terms of his speed at the combine. There are some wide receivers who will all be in competition for maybe the fastest 40-yard dash. Texas wide receiver Isaiah Bond. Could be one of those.
Yeah, I heard
him. And a Georgia wide receiver, Arian Smith, as well. Mm-hmm. Both of them are smaller guys, like 6 foot, 5'11", around 180, 185 pounds. It'd be unlikely we see anybody break the record that Xavier Worthy set last year at the Combine, the 4.21. I don't think anyone's expecting that. Who has evaluated some of these guys, but it's always interesting to see who the fastest guy is, because Worthy certainly was a player for the Chiefs last year. He had role for them and helped them on their way to the Super Bowl. And whoever puts up the fastest 40 is always going to garner some attention.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's, they measure it for a reason, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep. Let's see here. Wide receiver Savion Williams out of TCU is 6'5", 225 pounds. Big mammoth behemoth of a man. And if you want to talk a guy who's going to be, again, one of the top draft picks in this draft, wide receiver Tet McMillan out of Arizona is another one that's a really big guy. And it will be interesting to see exactly how he stacks up elsewhere with change of direction and speed as well. Because those guys, like, you can establish yourself if you're McMillan. You can solidify yourself as, like, a top 10 pick, you know, if you perform well in speed and change of direction. Because you're already big. We know – everyone knows you're strong, so those guys have have something to gain for sure if the big receivers can put up some good numbers in that aspect as well. So it'll be interesting to see what those guys do. A couple of defensive linemen, like Chris Ballard said, line are really good.
It's a good draft for that, so says the GM.
The one name that keeps coming up when I was trying to read a bunch of different places to put this list together, one name that kept coming up in terms of also having a great Senior Bowl was defensive end Shamar Stewart out of Texas A&M. 6'5", 281 pounds. That's getting closer to like the old defensive ends that were drafted. Mm-hmm. You know, like we talked about this with when we were talking about Dwight Freeney in the Hall of Fame a year ago here on the Colts Blue Zone podcast, and like how Dwight was like really changing the mold of what defensive linemen were. And at the time, like Julius Peppers was the standard defensive lineman, which is like 6'5", 280 pounds.
Big dudes.
Well, that's what Shamar Stewart is. He's that big, but he's also
But he's got like the Freeney athletic traits.
Yes, he does. But he's also a freak athlete. And some of these players, if you want a big list of athletes, like Bruce Feldman of The Athletic does a really good job every year before the season starts, putting together a list of freaks is what he calls them, like 50 freaks, the freaks list.
It fits well with this podcast.
It does. Yeah, no doubt. And Shamar Stewart was on that list, too. So like Stewart has earned himself, has been a riser in the pre-draft process. So he's a guy to look out for, to see exactly what kind of numbers he can put up at the combine. Indiana's own defensive tackle Kenneth Grant out of Michigan, went to Merrillville High School, is 6'3", 242 pounds. So again, huge dude. Like being compared to a guy like Jordan Davis a couple years ago, the Georgia guy at the combine who the Eagles drafted, like big guy, strong guy, has to work on technique and being able to get more consistent pass rush. But one of the strongest guys going to be out there, and 340-pound guys should not move as fast as you will see Kenneth Grant move.
That is absurd.
At the combine this week. Exactly. Here is one player that is on Dave's watch list for the Indianapolis Colts.
Dave's watch list.
And it is South Carolina safety Nick Emenwori.
Okay, yeah. Emenwori. A couple of mock drafts had the Colts with some interest in him.
Yes, indeed. He is 6'3", 227 pounds. For a safety that is large. Yeah. So you would expect a guy like that, you think box safety, right?
Right.
Well, he played everywhere at safety. He would be a rangy safety at South Carolina, too, and had 4 interceptions last year, 2 returned for touchdown, and 1 return from touchdown called back. So playmaker.
Ball
bing,
hawk.
Bing, 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 bing. Like, you need playmakers. And if you're going to draft a guy, a safety in the first round, I don't know if the Colts would take him at 14 if they were in the position where they would trade down Chris Ballard in the first round and have a later pick in that draft, in the draft, then maybe they would take him then. I'm not ruling out they would take him at 14. I haven't looked into that too much yet, but
right.
But he's a guy that will put up good numbers at this combine.
Well, it's all going to depend. Like we know that safety position it's always important, but it's extremely important in what Lou Anarumo wants to do. And so like if they're like, Lou, what do you need to make this defense work? And they're like, we need safety.
A guy like Javon Holland in free agency as well. Yes.
Right.
Like I think Emenwori, like I kind of like him, the little bit that I've looked into him so far. South Carolina.
Yeah.
Everyone who's listened to this podcast and now watches this podcast, congratulations, knows that I love safety play. So that'd be an intriguing pick. I mentioned running back. A guy that I'm looking forward to seeing what he does at the combine is Ollie Gordon, who last year was tremendous for Oklahoma State. He had 1,700 rushing yards, 21 touchdowns. His numbers went down this year because Oklahoma State was terrible.
Yeah.
They were 3-9. They went 0-9 in conference. They weren't running the ball as much. So he wasn't at the top end of the spectrum in terms of college football like he was 2 years ago. Like there were highlights of him every week because they actually had a decent team and he ran for 1,700 yards.
Yeah, that is so many yards in college football.
I think that when production goes down, a guy like comes out, goes to the back of your mind. He could jump right to the forefront of people's minds, I think, if he puts on a show at the combine, which is very possible. 6'2", 225 pounds. 6'2". Yeah, he's a big dude at running back and a strong guy. Like, everyone knows he's strong. And he could catch as well. He had 39 catches 2 years ago in the year that he ran for 1,700 yards, too. So really interesting to see what he can do. 2 tight ends on my guys to watch. One was Elijah Arroyo out of Miami. The one tight end that kept coming up in different lists of people who were interested to see at the combine. We'll see what he can, what numbers he can put forth. And I have to throw out Syracuse tight end, Aronde Gadsden II.
Oh, yeah.
He's also 6'5", 236 pounds. So I think that he could put up some intriguing numbers at the combine too. Was always a good pass catcher there in the carrier dome the past couple of years.
Yeah. And again,
NFL pedigree.
We like our guys. We like our, room. No, you don't. They do like Drew Ogletree on the tight end position. Oh. Ballard did mention they think he's developed really well, and they don't know what they have with Will Mallory.
Yeah, there's some other players that that will obviously test well, like Travis Hunter at Colorado is going to be a freak.
Yeah.
Carter, the defensive lineman out of Penn State, is going to be disgusting. James Pierce, I think, out of Tennessee will be interesting. Michigan cornerback Will Johnson. But that's just a little taste, I think, of some players that I think will be interesting to see what they do at the combine. And over the coming weeks, next week, we'll get a little bit more in terms of what they were able to do. And we'll certainly mention some combine standouts. And there's got to be a guy from Wisconsin somewhere that Chris Ballard's interested in right now, like Tanner Bordellini was last year after he put up quite the showing. But somebody will stand out. Somebody will surprise. A couple of guys will disappoint, I'm sure. But after this week, guys will either solidify themselves as first round performers or start to rise in because of what they were able to do at Lucas Oil Stadium.
The mock drafts are always really fun. The first week or two after the scouting combine, because we saw these guys play in college and stuff, but now people have seen them like in person doing the drills and all that stuff and seen what their measurables actually are and where they compare to, you get comp players, who do they compare to? And so that's going to be good stuff.
So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens at the combine. Again, you can read all Mike Chappell's work online, fox59.com, cbs4indy.com, from the combine and throughout the season following the Colts as well. We do appreciate you listening to us here on the Colts Blue Zone podcast. You can subscribe, get us delivered to your podcast listening device as soon as we drop every week. Matt Adams, follow him on Twitter at Statomatty. I'm Dave Griffiths at DaveG_sports. Mike Chappell is at MChappell51. We'll see you next week on the Colts Blue Zone podcast.